Fashion.
Turn to the left.
Fashion.
Turn to the right.
Fashion.
Fashion?
It's Fashion with Penelope Noir.
Is that you? I've only just realised that right now after like 2.5 years of doing this with you. Hello, Penny. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Ooh. Oh, didn't have your mic
I'm
on
good,
there.
Thanks.
That's good. Did you have a nice weekend?
Yes, thank you.
Good.
Yeah, whenever I hear that, it actually just makes me laugh and kind of like sets me off ready for the feature.
And we are continuing with the ever so popular.
Yeah, glam rock.
Glam rock, which the listeners are very familiar with. So text in your thoughts about what Penny's going to talk about to 5395.
Yes. That would be good. So today we're going to talk about Susie Quattro. And I'm going to shout out to my friend Amanda, who said, you should do Susie's Quattro. And then, sent me some books to check out.
Is your friend Amanda quite a big glam rock fan, or was it just particular to...
No, massive glam rock fan.
Mm.
Was texting in last week about Sweet. So
here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Susie Quattro is kind of known as the queen of glam rock, and I knew Susie Quattro as a recording artist, but I didn't realise she was like the epitome of the female glam rock. She influenced people like Joan Jett, The Runaways, L7, right through to Courtney Love.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And apparently what I didn't know was that she was the first female rock star in the sense of fronting a band and playing an instrument.
Not just being the kind of singer at the at the front. Yeah.
Yeah.
And nice.
I thought, that's pretty cool. So her kind of glam rock status started with her appearance on Top of the Pops in 1973. It was her first UK number one with a song called Can the Can. Mm. But she'd already been a musician for quite a long time. So she's like born in 1950 in Detroit. She formed a band when she was 14 with her sisters called the Pleasure Seekers, and they were a garage rock band, and they supported Iggy Pop, MC5, Alice Cooper.
She formed this band when she was 14, did you say?
Yeah.
And supported Iggy Pop when she was 14 in this band.
Yeah, the Pleasure Seekers
that's
were...
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's cool though.
I don't know what I was doing at 14, but
yeah, well, maybe it was
that.
Like, maybe it was older, but she formed that band... And then, and was partying with them and stuff like that.
Damn.
Whoa.
Yeah, but apparently, so if you listen to the Pleasure Seekers, they sound kind of like the female version of the Weeds.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing in the Seeds. And while she was in that band, she was kind of... Oh, then she kind of formed a band called Cradle, who split in 1971, and was offered a solo deal by a UK producer called Mickey Most.
Mm.
And so he took her over to the UK, and she was actually more popular in the UK in those early years than she was in the US until she kind of did the duet with, I think it's Chris Cohen, is that his name, called Stumbling In, which is, Chris Norman. And that's the song kind of that I first knew her for.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like a ballady kind of thing. But what's quite interesting is that her string of hits in the UK were written by Nicky Chinn and Mike Chapman, who also wrote Sweet songs, like we talked about them last week. So it's kind of that bubblegum kind of like pop kind of glam.
So would they have picked her up from the original Top of the Pops number one performance, do you think?
No, they wrote that song.
Oh, they wrote that song as well.
So she was actually accused of being manufactured because of, having this team around her that was, But when she went to, just before she went to release that song and perform on Top of the Pops, her producer Mickey Mo said, what do you want to wear? And she was a massive Elvis fan, and she said, I just want to wear leather. And he was like, are you sure about that? And she was like only 23, and she was like, yeah, I want to wear leather. And he was like, oh, what about if we put you in a jumpsuit? And she was like, oh, yeah, let's do that. And so they put her in this skin-tight jumpsuit. And at the time, she was being pretty innocent. She was just like, I want to be, a rock star and wear leather. And they put her in the skin-tight jumpsuit, and it just looked incredible. And the zip, went from the top to right to her crotch. So it was, pretty full-on.
A skin-tight leather jumpsuit sounds like it would be boiling to wear.
She did say that her stage costumes kind of only lasted about 2 years because the thread would wear away from the sweat, and it was just quite hot.
Sounds awful.
But what's quite interesting for her is that she you know, while the men kind of went really feminine in their costumes for glam rock, she went quite masculine. So she didn't wear much makeup, was wearing these skin-tight kind of leather kind of outfits. And I think for people who don't know Susie Quattro, but they know Joan Jett pretty much was the epitome of that as well.
Yeah.
She wore kind of, she had a mullet, she wore denim jumpsuits, and also had this really amazing silver leather one that had kind of slightly puffed sleeves.
Oh, that's cool.
And they were like, her cuffs were rolled up so she could play the bass. She also had the race car driver jumpsuit. Oh, God, I've forgotten his name.
The
Darcy Clay style, you know, tight fitting.
The leather jumpsuit I've just seen a picture of, and it is very, it's skin tight, but it's not necessarily super feminine.
Yeah, it's not like
kind of sounds like it would be.
Yeah, it's not like Star Trek 7 of 9 painted on.
Right.
You know, that it's so she can move, but it looks good. Like it's really, I think it's really tasteful.
Yeah,
because it's not
quite
too tight. You know.
Mm.
But I just feel like she was just very, very stylish. And the other thing that she did, which the who American audience knew her for, was she was Leather Tuscadero in Happy Days, and that's what she actually became known as, who was Fonzie's girlfriend.
Right.
And I kind of vaguely remembered her. And then, of course, like that show, Happy Days, was set in the 50s, but she looked glam rock, so it was like completely out of sync. But I think she, from memory, broke Fonzie's heart.
Yeah.
And there was a spin-off. She was offered a spin-off show, but she didn't want to be typecast. But she's still performing.
So, yeah, I was going to say, is she still around, still performing, still making music?
I'm not sure if she's doing... Yeah. I know that she continued to make music, but, I mean, she'd be, like, 80 now, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Is that right?
Does she live 50? In the US?
70.
Or UK now?
70. The US.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. It is interesting how with the glam rock, the men sort of went for this glamorous thing, and then it's still considered glam rock, but it's on the other end of the scale, kind of.
Yeah, and she wore like minimal makeup and, you know, really cool kind of like scarves and, you know, and that's like such a full-on trend, you know. Like this whole, you know, there's Rockins UK, which only makes scarves.
Yeah.
Well, they've like kind of gone on to make pyjamas and stuff as well, but originally they started as just, you know, a clothing outfit that made kind of Susie Quattro scarves.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of denim and leather, as like denim as well. I'm seeing pictures of her wearing like lots of denim jackets and sort of
and
two pieces.
If you've got a mullet and denim or leather, you don't need any makeup.
Yeah.
That speaks for itself.
Totally. And she also wore, there's also a lot of pictures of her wearing kind of like, almost three-piece suits, like Annie Hall styles, you know?
Yeah.
But Rolling Stones kind of described, or Rolling Stone, the magazine, described her style as leathers and Levi's.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, which totally kind of... But yeah, I kind of like feel bad for her, the fact that the press really... Like when you watch interviews with her, they really go, oh, it's quite interesting that you're popular in the UK, but you're not in your own home country, eh?
Oh.
You know, just stuff like that. And they really kind of go on about them being manufactured, whereas they didn't do that to Sweet.
No.
So it's quite sexist.
I was going to say, do you think it's a sort of sex thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But at least she's still performing and still around. That's,
yeah. Yeah. That's and awesome. There's actually a documentary that's, I think, just come out. It didn't go to the movies or anything, but it was released on DVD, and it's called Susie Q Utopia, and it's about her life, and it interviews people like Joan Jett and Andy from Sweet and a whole lot of other people. So it'd be quite interesting to watch.
Definitely. So if anyone wants to know anything more about Susie Quattro, then go find that documentary.
Yep.
Someone's texted in saying that my brother saw her at the town hall and she left the stage after playing for an hour or so, and people got up to leave, and then she came back on the stage and yelled, "Where the F do you think you're going?" And then a couple of other people just texting and saying that she rules.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
We're going to listen to one of her songs now.
Cool.
Do you want to introduce it?
Yes, this was the song that she played on Top of the Pops in 1973. It's her first UK number one, but her second release single, and it's called Can the Can.
Oh, I thought we were going to listen to Devil Gate Drive.
Oh, sorry. Okay, let's play that one.
Is that all right?
Let's do that.
Okay,
that
perfect.
Was also written by Mike Chapman and Nicky Chin. I think it was like the second or third single.
Perfect. All right.
Hey, y'all wanna go down to Devil
Thanks,
Gate
Penny.
Drive.
Thanks.
Come on.
That was Fashion with Penelope Noir.
We are the Goon Squad and we're coming to town. Beep, beep.
Beep, beep.